think it's about time we begin this morning. If you would, go ahead and turn in your Bibles to John, the fifth chapter. We'll begin in there in just a moment. I'd like to sort of start the class as we begin through this section of text. I'd like for you to look into the text, and as we get to that verse, look in your Bible to see if you have verse 4 or not. We'll talk a little bit about that in a moment. And then the other thing I want you to think about is, what's the worst possible thing that could happen to you? And we'll talk about that as we go in through this story, as we look in the Gospel of John this morning together. But before we do that, let's begin together with a word of prayer. So when we look into the fifth chapter, this section can kind of be broken up. It's now going to be, we're going to see some controversy that is going to arise. We're going to see some claims and some proofs that Jesus is going to provide that he is the Christ. And as we look into this first portion for today, we're going to see that there is an infirmed man that Jesus is going to heal. There's going to be some accusations against Jesus and that he's breaking the Sabbath. And the fact that he was able to, or he does claim to be equal with God, and this becomes an issue for the Jews at that time, and that's sort of a synopsis of what we're kind of looking for in this first part of the fifth chapter. The fifth and the sixth chapters are somewhat twins of each other in the sense that it's all about unbelief, but it's going to be two different groups that are going to have problems believing in Jesus, and so that's what we're going to look at this morning, part of next week, and probably the following week, Lord willing, as we look at the fifth and sixth chapters. So if you look in the text, starting in verse 1, it says, "And there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem." Now, this is in Jerusalem by the sheep gate. By the sheep gate, a pool, which is called in Hebrew Bethesda, having five porches. And so let's just stop right there. As John normally does, it's skipping between sections. It's not as chronological necessarily as what we see the other Gospels. Sometimes there's gaps in time. We're not really told after this. Well, after what, John? I mean, it's not something that we can point to know exactly what he's talking about. We assume it is after what we just talked about last week, where the nobleman's son was healed. But then it gives us some clue that Jesus is going to Jerusalem, and he's going for a feast, but he doesn't tell us necessarily what feast it is. If you look, you continue on into 5 and 6, it seems like this may be the Passover. This is potentially the second time in Jesus' ministry, potentially, that this is him going to Jerusalem for the Passover. We're assuming if he's going to Jerusalem, it's probably one of the more important feasts, and so he's either going there for Passover, for Pentecost, or the one of the tabernacles. That's why you would go to Jerusalem for those particular feasts. But anyway, we're not really told which one this is or be able to tie that together, but I don't think that's the importance of this one. But this is a time in which Jesus decided to come to Jerusalem, and he goes to this area called the Sheep Gate where there's a pool, and this is relatively close to the temple. It's not right on the temple grounds or anything like that. But in Hebrew, it's called Bethesda, and it's having these five porches. Some sort of artist sort of depiction of what that sort of looks like. The pools were in the center of these two buildings, and so the five porches comes from the sort of portico that goes around them, and they share a portico that's between the two. And as we read further into this section of verses, we find out that this is where a great number of sick people come. I guess I've always sort of thought about it. It's similar to the people that would bring someone to Jesus. We're not really told how these people got here, whether these people stay here for long periods of time. And this is just a place. It is a great multitude of sick people and blind and lame and paralyzed. How do they get there? I mean, are people bringing them there? Is this a place where people leave them and this becomes sort of just the place in which they all just stay by these pools? We're not really told about that. The verse 4 is the one that I ask you to look for to determine whether or not that's in your Bible or not. It depends on which version you have. King James and New King James typically list it. It depends on which translation in the New King James that it's looking at. Because there's this added section in here, verse 4, it says, "For an angel went down at a certain time into the pool and stirred up water, and whoever stepped in first after the stirring of the water was made well of whatever disease he had." Any issues with talking about angels or why this would be here? I mean, do we have issues with angels? I mean, we believe in angels, right? Why is there a problem with this verse being in or not being in? The focus is not really the angels. The focus is what Jesus is going to do. What John's recording for us is this is a place where the infirm people came. There was a tradition that they felt that when this water stirred, that it must be by an angel because people who were dipped into the water, they somehow were made well. But what I think John is trying to point out, and what we look back at the early manuscripts, that verse is not in there. So I think what John is just trying to point out is, yes, this is why people came there. There was some stirring of the water. And by tradition, people thought that it was an angel that did that, and potentially this is how people were made well. If we look back at the early manuscripts, it would seem that John didn't write that verse. Someone added that later to try to provide some context to why people were coming here. But what we're going to look at is it's not so much what the angel may have done or whether it was attributed to the angel. What we're going to see is what Jesus does. Any thoughts or comments about this verse, or
well, if you don't have it in there, you still have verse 7 where it does
right.
Mention the stirring.
So exactly.
Maybe this is just a further clarification.
And I think that's what most people sort of look at. There is a stirring, whether that was a natural stirring because it's a spring, and so people just, and then they attributed the fact that, hey, you know, so and so went there, dipped in that water, and his knee was made better. So it must be something magical about those waters that were there. But what we're looking at here is that what this added verse in here is really trying to add in what the lore was about it, not so much what potentially was really happening in those pools at that particular time. We do know this is why they gathered here. They gathered by this pool. Yeah, Seth?
Does it mean
House of Mercy? House of Mercy, yep. And it's sort of where we kind of get, I mean, there's lots of hospitals that are named Bethesda. I mean, there's a lot about that name that sort of continues on even for us today. And so this is why people gathered here. And we see that this is where the sick and the infirm came, whether they were brought there, whether they were left there, and this became sort of the just almost not really a hospital, but a place in which they were left there. This was the part of a society that no one knew what to do with the people that were blind and lame and paralyzed. All they could do was sit there and wait. And so this is that section of verses which, you know, again, whether or not that's there or not, I think we learn more about what Jesus is going to do, because there was a certain man who had an infirmity 38 years. And when Jesus saw him lying there, he knew what he had already had been there in that condition a long time. And so he said to them, "Do you want to be made well?" So what we've learned earlier, there's a multitude of people between these five porches, waiting for the water to stir. Why does Jesus pick this man?
38 years?
Okay. You're right. He wanted to pick someone, if he's going to perform a miracle, it needs to be something that everybody would know. Anything about 38 years? A lifetime for that man, for sure. If you're into kind of looking at numbers, and I think we've talked a little bit about that, David's had some lessons on that. 38 years is also the number of years from when the Israelites were in the wilderness as they began to move from, it was the 40 years that they were wandering the wilderness, but from when they, before they went into the promised land, it was 38 years. And so whether or not this number of 38 years, this is a group of people, it's not this man's faith that is going to make him well. It is Jesus that's going to make him well. This man doesn't know who Jesus is. This man didn't search for Jesus. We've seen that before where people are going to come to Jesus because they know he has this power. This man is there. Jesus picks him out and asks him, would you want to be made well? Jimmy? Okay.
To take advantage of this miraculous. And I think that plays into, you know, when we consider Jesus and his compassion. He knew that about this man too, right? He knew that there were others that were getting ahead of him, and he was powerless to really do anything to help himself. So it just shows that's who Jesus is looking for, to help those.
Right, right. And again, I think that's what we've been talking about in this particular class. We need someone who can be a witness. This man didn't know Jesus. This man had this infirmity for 38 years, so the miracle that's going to happen, the sign that's going to happen, it wasn't something that he was able to do. He was not able to make himself. He was completely infirmed, and if we take it from a spiritual context, lost without Jesus. Jesus is the one that is able to make him well. And as the man answers Jesus' question, well, certainly I want to be made well, but the only way I can be made well is I've got to be dipped in the pool at the right time because someone else is going to jump ahead of me and take care, the waters are going to heal that person instead of healing me. So are you going to put me in the water at the right time, Jesus? Did I hand up Mark? Okay.
Would go. It's a great multitude of sick and lame people. And I go with Jimmy's point about the compassion that he had. Of course, he did the miracle to prove who he was.
Right.
In there in the heart of Jerusalem, when a lot of other people were there as well. So he was giving people opportunity to believe in him.
Right.
But it's significant that he went there.
Right. Significant, I think that's something to point out as well, because it's relatively close to the temple. This is a time period in which people are coming to Jerusalem, but this is the part that nobody wants to look at. Nobody wants to go see those people. And Jesus didn't need to go through those pools to get to the temple. There's probably ways around that to not go through that area, but Jesus chooses to go through there because he's going to make a point. The other thing was, I'm assuming he knew that that's where these sick and infirm people were left, right? So why didn't Jesus not do that on Thursday? Why did he choose to do it on the Sabbath? Because he's going to make a point. And that's why he chooses to go there that day to find this man to have a sign, to perform a sign. Any other thoughts or comments? Yep. Right, right. Good point, Bruce. John, you had a comment too?
The question Jesus asks is strange. He says, do you want to be made well?
Right.
That's a strange question to ask for a man who's right there.
Right, right. Do you want to be made well? I've been coming here, and I don't know whether he's been coming here for 38 years or not, but potentially, this man has wanted to be healed for 38 years. And for Jesus to ask him that question, it does seem kind of be a little bit of an odd question. Other thoughts or comments? Yeah.
It's kind of a similar situation.
That's right.
But yeah, the irony of that question is that you overcome if Jesus has the power to do it. He's not just kicking this guy while he's down. He's,
right.
You know, he's about to change this man's life.
Exactly, exactly. There was another comment in the back too, right? Good point. Good point. Other thoughts or comments? So if we look back in verse 7, it says, "So the sick man answered him, 'Sir, I have no man to put me into the water when the water is stirred up. But while I am coming, another steps down before me.' So Jesus said, 'Rise, take your bed, and walk.' And immediately the man was made well, took up his bed, and walked." Interesting as well, and we're going to find that there's going to be an issue with the way in which Jesus heals this man because he healed him on the Sabbath. He also told this man to take up his bed and carry his bed. And so now the tradition of the elders are going to have a problem with the fact this man carried his bed on the Sabbath, and that was work, and so that's a problem. And so they're not going to look at the fact that Jesus changed this man's life. Instead, they're going to look at the things that in their minds, Jesus did in error, and that's what we'll talk about next. Jesus could have told him to just rise, didn't have to tell him to take up his bed, but as he's walking through the streets and going to the temple, because that's where we're going to find where he goes, he's carrying his bed with him. Now, we're not talking about queen-size mattress and box spring and stuff like that. I mean, this is something they probably rolled up, his bed mat that he rolled up, but that's going to be a problem for the Jewish leaders at that particular time. The other thing I think we need to look at is in verse 9, the word immediately. And what should that tell us? Someone who's been lame for 38 years, the atrophy of the muscles that are in his body, you know, to sort of immediately be able to have strength in his legs and walk, I mean, just shows the power of Jesus. And it wasn't something that, okay, now you need to go to physical therapy and you're going to have sort of 6 months of physical therapy and maybe eventually you'll get some movement back in your legs and you'll be able to walk. Immediately he was able to get up. And it wasn't something that, it wasn't this man's faith that did it. This man didn't know who it was. In fact, we're going to find out that he still doesn't know who it was until he gets to the temple later. Thoughts or comments? Yes. Again, I think it goes back to the point earlier about the fact that it was 38 years. People knew this man, knew that he was infirmed. And now he's walking, holding this bedroll, and that is a sign. And that's, and again, I think it was Jesus' knowledge of why he chose that man to heal on the Sabbath, because he's going to make a point of that. Mark, did you, Mark and then Josh. Okay.
So it's interesting that Jesus didn't use the water.
Right. Right.
He didn't reinforce. He didn't say, "Let me stir the water and let you jump in real quick."
Right.
He didn't touch it. All he did was tell him to do something.
Right. Right.
Now he used obviously for so long, and what he needed one.
Right.
Chapter 9, maybe. That's just interesting. He didn't. If it was a superstition.
Right.
About
Right, good point. The other part of that, you know, it doesn't seem that he says that he laid his hands on him or anything like that. Similar to the nobleman's son. He just said, "Your son is healed." I mean, he didn't have to be there. I mean, wasn't even in the same room with the person, didn't see the person, didn't know to what point of sickness that person was. He says, "Your son is healed." Same thing here. Just tells the man to rise and walk. Jimmy?
Right. And then the notion of our condition, this man
Exactly.
Is we're lost.
Sure.
So that's described as rich symbolism in that. And then the idea that when we finally come to our senses and follow God's instructions, we go from hopeless, lost, condemned, to having everything.
Right.
It's immediate.
Right.
We come
right.
Out
yep.
It is an immediate, you were here, now you're here.
Right. Right.
I don't know that I paid that close attention, but yep. Symbolism is just really, really rich here in this chapter.
Good point. Other thoughts or comments? And it's almost as an aside, right? As I turn the page here, and that day was the Sabbath. I mean, almost this sort of added little section there for John to tell us that, okay, there's going to be some conflict based on this. The Jews therefore said to them, Who was cured? It is the Sabbath. It is not lawful for you to carry your bed. And that section there where it says it is the Sabbath and it's not lawful for you to do that. Is it truly not lawful within the context of what we see in Deuteronomy? Was this a problem for what this man had done? Nope. Now, Right. That's right. Yep. We're going to see that this lawfulness is a lawfulness that these men, these elders, had put forward to say, because people were having a problem with it. We understand in Deuteronomy it says to not work. I mean, we're supposed to rest. The Sabbath is to... But people wanted to know, well, how much can I do? What if that's work, what if I I can go right up to that line, and as long as I don't cross that line, well, I haven't worked. And so these people wanted to know, there's 39 different things that these rabbis have come up with to define what was work. Carrying is one of those things in their mind, but then how far could you carry it? How heavy would that thing happen to be? Oddly enough, if you have a bed in which someone who's infirmed on is on the bed and two people are carrying that person on the bed, that's not work. But if you were just carrying a bed, that was work. But it's because they're looking for some way, and they needed that definition. They needed to know, I don't want to violate God's law, so we're going to put this added effort here and we'll define as the rabbis what work was. And so that's what these men saw that was unlawful. But it's interesting what Jesus is going to say about working on the Sabbath. And this is where we're going to find five times in this section where Jesus is going to talk about who he is. And this is why Jesus chose to do this sign on the Sabbath. And so they go up to him and he says, and so he answered and said, he who made me well said to me, take up your bed and walk. All I was doing what that man told me to do. He healed me, told me to take up my bed and walk, so that's what I'm doing. And they ask him, who is this man who said that? Take up your bed and walk. But the one who was healed didn't know who it was, for Jesus had withdrawn, and the multitude was being in that place. And so again, Jesus sees that this is going to be a commotion that's going to rise out of it and sort of just quickly sort of moves to the side and exits. While these men see what this man has carrying his bed on the Sabbath. But after it, Jesus finds him in the temple and he said to them, see, you have been made well. Sin no more, lest a worse thing come upon you. So the man departed and told the Jews that it was Jesus that made him well. And that question that I asked you before, what's the worst thing that could happen to you? For this man, up until this point, it was probably being infirm for 38 years. But Jesus tells him, see, you have been made well. Sin no more. And I guess just the just what we can read out of that when we see on this side of the cross, the fact that he had been made well, now sin no more. The idea that when we come in contact with the blood, that we're made well, and all of that is... What is the worst thing that could happen to us? Well, the worst thing that happened to us is we forfeit our salvation. And again, when these people are sort of looking at that, and we've had problems with his audience before, are falling into that, they can't get out of the physical. They're only looking at here the horizon. They're not looking at things spiritually. And what Jesus is trying to point out, is going to begin to point out, that there are a lot worse things that could happen to you in terms of forfeiting your salvation. So the things that we see on this earth, the fact that you were infirmed, if you were infirmed for another 38 years, losing your soul would be the part that I guess he is going to begin to sort of share with them to understand to go and to sin no more. Thoughts or comments up to this point? Yeah, Josh.
Just a couple things. So I really like how the man responds when they say, "Why are you doing that?" And then he said, "Well, the man who made me well told me to do it. Now, basically, I'm reading into this. I'm going to listen to him before I do anything else."
Right.
I don't really care what you say. I'm going to do what he said. The other thing is this tradition of the Jewish people to add laws or to add this structure around. There is a tendency to do that in the religious world today. We see some religions have their book of 100 rules that they need to learn as kids, and they need to memorize those. But I think we can also do it as parents, training our children as they grow up. If we've ever caught ourselves, you know, if the child does something and we say, "That's bad," and they say, "Why?" "Because you're not supposed to do that." You know, that's kind of a response of what the Jews would have, and not training the child as to why, you know. And we might get questions about tobacco use. "Well, that's bad. Why is that bad?" "Tattoos, that's bad." Or, "Why is that bad?" You know, there's certain things that we have in our society that we've deemed as bad. And we either can or cannot support it with Scripture, but we've been raised in such a way that we don't reason from Scripture to analyze those specific things, so we just tell our children, "Don't do it." And that's not doing them any favors.
All right. And again, I think that these people, we're going to see as Jesus tries to teach them things about, you know, "You've heard this, but I tell you this." I mean, that part of the law had always been there, but that's just the part that they have just forgotten. There's parts that they would rather just be able to be told exactly up to a point, and then they don't have to think about it anymore, right? They don't have to make that decision. They don't have to search the Scriptures to find something out. They're just told, "This is the line. Don't cross this line. And as long as you don't cross this line, then you're fine." But you don't understand why you should even approach the line. And that's the part that I think that we need to kind of understand. Yeah. Right.
But
he's worshiping. So it says something about his character. Right. I'm not sure if you heard Debbie or not. The fact that, where did this man go? He went to the temple. And whether he now attributes the fact that he has been made well and he wants to go to the temple and thank God for the fact that this man, whoever this was, healed him. And so he decides to go to the temple. And then, again, is that the knowledge that Jesus had in that man's heart that knows that this is where he's going to go after that? We're not told that, but
he needed to go and make the sacrifice.
Facts, sir.
Right.
So again, once we look this bringing him to the temple, he's carrying his bedroll. This becomes an issue for them. They want to know who's done this. Who would heal someone on the Sabbath? Why could you not have waited till the next day? Why could you not have done this the day before? You chose to do it on this day, the day in which you know you should not have, this work should not have happened. So for this reason, the Jews persecuted Jesus and sought to kill him because he had done these things on the Sabbath. And it's interesting because right now they are looking to persecute him and sought to kill him. But they're about to get some other reasons they can add to that list besides the fact that he did this on the Sabbath. And so Jesus answered to them said, and this is interesting because he's not coming out and saying, he said, "You did this on the Sabbath, you've worked on the Sabbath, you violated what they say is the law." But Jesus doesn't say that, "Hey, I wasn't working." What does he say? "My Father has been working to now, and I have been working." He has been working on the Sabbath. Not to violate what God's law was, but to violate what these elders thought. But what does it say here about the Father has been working until now? What's that? Now he's taking over. But what is he saying about the Father is doing on the Sabbath? What is God doing on the Sabbath? He's working. He rested from creation, but the Sabbath, the God is still doing things. God is making sure that this world is sustained. And for the Jews of that time, they understood that point, that God can be working. But now Jesus is saying, God is working and I'm working. That becomes a problem for them because the only person who can be working would be God. So now they're going to have an issue, the fact that he is making this claim that he is equal with God. And not only that, he goes, therefore the Jews sought to more to kill him, because not only had he broken the Sabbath, but he's now said that God is his Father and has made himself equal with God. And so Jesus is not denying the fact that he is working, just as the God the Father is working. And he was working to show this man, heal him, and now show this sign that he is God and he's the Son of God. Thoughts, sir?
This is reminiscent of Pharaoh and his hard heart. All the miracles that he had seen would not affect him. These Jews, it doesn't matter what Jesus would do, whether it was on the Sabbath or not, Jesus could have uprooted the city of Jerusalem, put it in the air, spun it around, put it back down,
right,
and
right.
They would have said, why did you do that?
That's right. On the Sabbath.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
They have the hard hearts. I mean, if they didn't, verse 16 would say, followed Jesus and sought to magnify him,
right,
because he done this.
Right, right.
But they just, it didn't matter when he was doing it. It's just the fact that he was doing it.
Right.
They were filled with envy.
Right. Other thoughts? Yeah, Branson. In the beginning. Branson was pointing out, if you weren't able to hear, that John starts his gospel talking about that Jesus was there at the beginning. And so again, what we're seeing here is this is so that we might believe. This is so Jesus performed that sign that they might believe that he is the Son of God. We see it now on our side. Again, these were witnesses that John decided to record for us so that we might believe. Jimmy? Right.
Suffering like this, but they weren't. This, I think you highlighted. These are people that society has forgotten about. These are people we don't want to be around. They're not clean. Not only are they not clean, they got nothing but a bunch of needs. They're a needy bunch of people, and I don't have time for these people.
Right.
And
right.
So, while he's overjoyed with what's happened for him, this person is of no value to them. Even in
right.
this hillside, he's of no value.
Right.
He just presents a problem.
Right.
To
right.
them still.
Right.
And this lack of
right.
And it's why Jesus over and over again exposes their hearts for truly
right.
what they were. They were nowhere close to being the people they claimed to be.
Claimed
they could
to be.
Dress out, they could dress the part, they could speak the part, but their actions showed
right.
what they were all about.
Yeah. Seth?
We have the wonderful blessing of hindsight. And we definitely want to give these people a hard time. They knew the law better than anyone. They were looking for the Messiah to come. But they're looking at flesh and blood in front of them.
Right.
This could not be God.
Right.
Even though they couldn't explain what was happening, this can't be God. It's flesh and blood. So
right.
there's something to their hardness of heart, because it's right. just a man in front of them.
Right. And again, we're going to find this out in sort of next week's study, as we see that there are others who are going to believe in Jesus in the sense that this could be the Messiah. He's the king, but they want to make him an earthly king, and that's when that becomes a problem too, because they can't get past the sort of earthly side of things and the spiritual side of things. Jesus goes on to answer, and again, he is adding sort of more fuel to the fire here, because he's already claimed a sort of equality with God, And now he's going to say, Jesus answered and said, most assuredly, I say to you, the Son can do nothing of himself but what he sees the Father do. For whatever he does, the Son also does in a like manner. Can we see what God is doing? We can see maybe the reaction of things. We can see that the wind blows. We can see that the sun rises. But we don't see what God is doing. And that's what Jesus says he sees. He sees all of the inner workings of what's going on. The Father loves the Son and shows him all things that he himself does, and he will show him greater works than these that you may marvel. For as the Father raises the dead and gives life to them, even so the Son gives life to whom he will. Were there other prophets who were able to raise people from the dead? Elijah, all right? Was he able to give life to anyone he wanted to? No. Prayed to God for those types of things to happen. Those men worked through God's ability. What does Jesus say he's able to do? I can raise anybody I want to. I've got the power to do that. Power is in me. So the Father raises the dead and gives life to them. Even so, the Son gives life to whom he will. And again, he is showing that I am the Son. And this again is just adding more fuel to this. Because not only did he claim to be equal with God, now he's claiming to be the Son of God. And so he's not denying it. And those people who say, well, Jesus never really claimed to be the Son of God. I mean, there's five times in this section of verses here in different ways that Jesus is claiming to be the Son of God. Thoughts or comments before we catch the second bell? Another one where he goes in and says, the Father judges no one but has committed all judgment to the Son. He's already claimed to be the Son. And that all should honor the Son just as they honor the Father. He who does not honor the Son does not honor the Father who sent him. And that becomes the Father, or that comes the problem. Jesus is there as the Son, and they are not giving him the honor that they should. Thank you for your comments this morning. Look forward to our conversations next week, Lord willing.